Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
The show is not suitable for children, sensitive men, or insecure women.
Can you trust somebody that doesn't take care of their kids?
I don't trust no man on earth that does not take care of their children.
What's the biggest red flag in a relationship?
Low effort and not being honest.
Most of the time, you would think that a bad financial mistake would be spending money on clothes or vacation or like spending money on women. My worst financial mistake was buying a home.
Game time. Appreciate y'all.
Yes, sir.
We're back.
Back at it.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. You from remote location.
That's a fact. Diversify your tip.
Have to.
Gotta do it.
Gotta diversify the portfolio at all costs.
Gotta do it, man. So, man, much stuff to talk about. With so much drama in the LBC, man, it's been a hell of a week, man. So, you know, we got a lot to talk about. We got a special guest, Tamika Mallory.
Legend.
That's about to come on. Legend when it comes to, you know, social activism. But a lot of people don't really know her story. Like, she got a story to tell. So looking for sure. And of course we're gonna talk about, you know, the Trump tariffs and all that.
I don't know what's going on, man. Listen, I don't want to speak his name, but when Big T acting like big somebody else, this is hey y'all in the office, y'all go knock on that door. Tell them this not gonna go well.
Yeah,
the hood tax for the world is crazy.
That's a fact. So yeah, so it's a lot. It's a lot to talk about, but you know, we're not gonna waste too much time. I will say this. Shout out to Shaka Wear. So they gave me this shirt. Business is war.
Oh, I need one of those. XL. Let me get one.
More appropriate now than
that's
ever.
That's true.
Business is war. So their Instagram is Shaka underscore wear. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they sent me a few t-shirts, but I felt like this one was really, really appropriate for the times that we're in, for sure.
Absolutely.
So shout out to them. Salute. And don't forget, tomorrow we got a big episode with Pinky Cole at 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Earn your leisure. Yeah, she's gonna talk about how she lost a company back. Mergers and acquisitions, mistakes that she made. You know, she's been in the news a lot. So this is a sit down, full length interview. So all you entrepreneurs out there, all you hustlers, make sure you tap
cautionary
in.
Tale. Yeah.
That's a fact. And of course, get your tickets to InvestFest. We working, man. We had some calls today, actually. So it's going to be a good one. It's going to be prizes. It's going to be some legendary moments per usual. So go to investfest.com, get your tickets, get your vendor boost. If you're in Red Panda, you got to check Telegram.
Absolutely.
And it's lit. Any announcements?
Package secure, remote location. if you want to get rich from the market, go to eninvest.com. What an amazing feeling to know what's going to happen 30 to 90 days ahead of time. If I made you money, please put yes in chat. Stock club call, check the time and Telegram for that. Prices will be out this Sunday. Now that I know what Trump's tariff plan is kind of going to be, a failed one at that. Prices will be out this weekend. I love y'all. Let's have an amazing show.
So let's get into it before we bring our guest on. Before we Trump and all this stuff that's happening, you had a lot of what's your reply to Forex traders?
Shout out to them. I love y'all dearly. My thing is, it's really important to listen to the information, because a lot of people were like, yo, you too influential to say this. Shout out to the brother who posted that. But the truth is the global pension fund market bigger than the Forex market? And my thing is, if you have to provide pushback online, it tells me how well you are doing or aren't. You know who had nothing to say to me? Jessica McDonald. Not one text, not one reply. Jay, just playing with the kids, getting their pips, making a killing. A lot of times, hit dogs will holler. We'll talk about Kenny later. But when people are like, yo, I don't think the stock market is real. Cool, stay in that delusion and let me get all my coins and keep them for me and Xander. I'm cool with that. But to the Forex traders, maybe, just maybe, if most of the world leaders are telling you this is not a primary asset and it's not a primary hedge anymore. Like, you can argue the hedge that Forex used to be in the 90s, crypto's taking that over. So just be mindful. Let's all get along. Let's all love each other, especially during these tumultuous times in office. But I love y'all. But futures pays more money than Forex.
For the rest,
I saw them comment, you wouldn't say it if you knew how to trade it. There are Forex futures that pay more. If you would love to learn, come join Red Panda or Sniper 2 that will be out in August. Love y'all.
So, okay. Speaking of that, we gotta talk about this Kenny Burns situation. Salute to Kenny Burns, first and foremost. That's the bro.
For real, I love Kenny. Yeah,
we spoke yesterday too, and he was really was talking more than anything. But so he made a post, but he pretty much said the stock market is a Ponzi scheme, and that's why it's beneficial to invest in real estate. Pretty much saying like, drop 30% in one day, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen. Or in one, like, you're not gonna feel the same as tangible. You got dirt. Know what you got, you can see it. Whereas, you know, stocks are invisible. You make an announcement about tariffs and it goes down. And, you know, so he was saying, like, that's why I'm not even on that type of time. But it does bring up a good conversation for people that have some similar type of concerns about stocks, right? So I feel like for me personally, I'll let you say what, you know, your thoughts on it. But for me personally,
yeah.
I mean, history is the best indicator, right? And over the course of time, the stock market has outperformed real estate, actually.
Without a question.
So I would be cautious about that type of mentality, because if history is any indicator, that's historically not true.
Yep.
Now, can you gamble in stocks? Can you put your money in stocks and it goes to zero? Can you lose everything in stocks? Yeah, for sure. You can lose everything. Sure. You can lose everything in real estate also, though. I mean, we heard about actually lost her home because she didn't pay $500 property tax, and the home was worth like $500,000. So who pulls this tricks? Intimate domain. Like, that's the thing about people was like, what about the government taking you? That's the crazy thing. People in America were saying, like, okay, you guys invested in government, but what if the government just wants to take the land? Da, da, da. You don't realize that this has happened already in the United States of America. Central Park used to be...
It was a black neighborhood.
Black neighborhood. It was taken by eminent domain. So eminent domains means the government can take your property, can take your land, right? They're supposed to give you some level of equal value, allegedly.
But that's happened equal value 40 years prior.
Yeah, but that's happened time and time again. When they want to build highways,
it's happening right now.
Yeah. So okay. Put things in perspective. Stock market is not a Ponzi scheme. Right? What's your thoughts?
I love Kenny. Kenny's one of my favorite people. And normally when I line up the compliments, it's some bullshit coming after. It's not one of them times. Kenny, I love you. Inspiration. You was rocking. I was seeing you move around, slicing, 07. But I do understand how the brother in Forex felt when he was like, yo, you're too influential to say this kind of bullshit, right? For everyone who says dirt is better or real estate is better because I can touch it, I can feel it. I can touch this iPhone, LVMH. I can touch that. Like, that sounds good, but only that information is delivered to our community to make us not invest. What does Buffett do? Combination, right? So you want to own dirt and tech, dirt and paper. It's not either or, it's either and. So no, is it a Ponzi? No. Can you lose money? Yeah, especially if you don't listen to me. I want to be real clear. And if you have my number, you should never say that. Never say that. So I get the sentiment. I get the fear. But even now, there's homeowners being moved because they're trying to build a road right now and take their property and give them 40 cents on the dollar. Also, real estate doesn't appreciate as fast or stocks. Even like when Tweet hit me, I want to have a debate about stocks. I'm like, you my guy. I don't
Tweet said that?
Yeah, I'm like, my brother. Especially Canadian real estate versus U.S. stocks. Bloodbath, my boy. Justin Trudeau could never. Dog. Oh, fucking Tweet. What? But it's all bonds, real estate, stocks. Angel investing, gotta be careful because even they'll tell a story with Pinky, but everyone who gives you capital is not an ally. Gotta be very careful. So is it a Ponzi? No. If you invest in the wrong thing, can it go awry? And prior to us having a show, was it more difficult? For sure. But if I made you money, please put yes in chat.
That's a fact though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shout out to Kenny. I love Kenny Dealey, though.
Shout out to Kenny, man. All right. Let's talk about this, too. This is another financial topic that we haven't spoke about before, but it's actually a case study. So, before we do that,
we have a special guest that we're going to bring on.
Yes.
Much needed conversation.
For sure.
In the turbulent times that we're in. So, here we go.
I made it. Earn Your Leisure podcast show. I'm on here with these two incredible giants, leaders, thinkers in our community and community in the world. And I'm very, very excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Okay, Tamika Mallory, somebody that needs no introduction. How do you define yourself as an activist, what would the title be for you?
Icon.
Well, thank you, Ian. I appreciate that. I am a strategist. I'm an organizer. I think that, you know, obviously activists are critically important because you can't lead folks if there are no people that are actively engaged. But there's a difference between, you know, posting a thing, throwing on a t-shirt, pumping your fists, and which is all, again, important, and being someone who basically orchestrates the movement. And that's what I do. I've been doing it for 30 years of my life. So I think I graduated to the title of being an organizer.
So let's get into it. I know you got
Ian.
Ian's back. Ian.
Oh, that was me? Yeah, I'm here.
You got that. Okay. Let me just do this. Okay, so let's get into this conversation. We're going to talk about your book and everything you got going on. But first, we got to talk about the times that we're in. So we had a pastor on a few weeks ago, and we asked him about the church and how a lot of Black people have been disenfranchised with church over the course of time because they feel like, a variety of things. From a social standpoint, right, there's been a lot of backlash from the Black community for social activism, even like Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. And it's common themes of like, oh, they're not really doing nothing, or they taking money from white people. George Soros has become a
super villain.
He's the go-to person whenever somebody has a level of criticism. Yeah. They're wondering about George Soros, da, 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 da. So what is your thoughts on the criticism of that from Black community specifically?
Well, some of the criticism is warranted. I hear people say things all the time that I'm like, yep, I feel the same way. And in fact, I have some of the same criticisms about how the movement operates. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we're doing a great job, and sometimes I feel like we could be doing much, much, much better. I think that our lack of, at times, unity among not just organizations, but just Black influential people in general can be very, very confusing for the masses, because when they're watching us and everybody's got different talking points and everybody's an expert just because they have a microphone and a camera, it makes folks feel like, you know, what the hell is actually going on? You know what I mean? And who do we really turn to that we can get good information from? And I think that has a lot to do with how we don't sit in enough rooms together. We've talked about this many times, Rashad, like all of us sitting in enough rooms together where we can, when we are out speaking forward facing, we've at least debated the issues enough within ourselves that our talking points sound familiar, you know, it's, or we might say, I'm not going to talk about that this month. I'm not going to be in this issue because I don't want to be a divergent. I don't want to cause confusion. Like, we have to actually have a well-oiled machine if we're going to bring people along. So I don't disagree with all of the criticism that's out there. What I will say is that not all of it starts with us. And that's the part that concerns me. It is that the New York Post, which is, you know, a right-wing newspaper in New York that has literally had Black folks in there as cartoon monkeys in the past. It is a newspaper that wrote all types of lies about me and other leaders. I think about the Daily Mail, which is another newspaper that is basically right-wing owned. And they oftentimes drop these articles that basically tells us who should be our leaders, who we should like or dislike, whether or not people stole money, whether they lie. And the next thing you know, it hits the internet and Black folks, including Black leaders, are sharing it and or using those talking points. So oftentimes what I ask people is, when you say you have a critique of something, I just want to know, what is your source of it? Where did it come from? How did you develop this opinion? Where did you get these talking points from? Did it come from other Black people, or did it come from someone who is imposing a thought process in our community and using what they know is going to divide us? And I just think we have to be able to decipher between the two things, because sometimes our thoughts about things is just like marketing. It is being controlled by outside sources.
For sure. How do we tell a good activist from a bad activist who's really just doing this for clout?
Well, I mean, you know, it takes a while. See, I have spidey senses. Because 30 years of my life, of course, I can just spot them right off the bat. When I meet people who are automatically talking about how the things of the past are no good, you know, those people get out of here. We don't want to see Reverend so-and-so and such and such person. Let's throw out those theories, concepts, attitudes, or our past history. When I watch people who believe that somehow they are coming into the space with something new that has never been done before, I'm always cautious about that. And I always laugh to myself and say, I'm gonna see how long this lasts, or whether it's a gimmick or if it is somebody who's really, really going to stay in the fight. And I'll tell you a couple of things about that, because number one, so I am a child of the civil rights movement. I was raised in civil rights and in the Black church. So my parents, they took me throughout the week to Black empowerment spaces. I did everything from going to the Nation of Islam to the National Action Network, Reverend Al's organization. Mm-hmm. We went to an Urban League rally, an NAACP thing. My mentor, Hazel Dukes, recently passed away at 92 years old. She was a civil rights icon who was in the NAACP. So we did everything. And we were street corner activists. Like, my parents would also go listen to whatever Black scholar who might have smelled bad, didn't even have good clothes on, but they knew some shit. They read some books, and they would talking that stuff and on 125th Street at the Mart 125. Like, I grew up going through the spectrum. But on Sundays, my mother also took me to the Black church. So I had an opportunity to see sort of the radical side. And then we would go to the church where it wasn't so radical because they weren't too politically engaged, but they were helping communities. They were taking the resources coming in, paying people's rent, keeping people's lights on, feeding the hungry, doing clothing drives, taking trips to other parts of the world. So I got to see both sides. So from my perspective, while I think all Black institutions could do better, right? I think everybody could do better. I also know that there is an important history of how these things started and how at this point, still today, these organizations help to undergird some of the things that we see happening in the Black community. So what I do is I look at it, I honor it, and add my own flavor and find other people who are doing other incredible things. So when you ask me, how do I make the determination? Whenever I see or hear that mindset, it makes me take pause with individuals who believe that they're coming into the space with something new, because there is nothing new. People have tried financial development. People have tried think bigger, think Blacker. You know, people have tried let's not work with anybody else outside of our community, only Black, all of those things folks have tried. Folks have tried coalition building with Latinos and whites. It has been done in history. So that's one. The second thing is, I kind of feel like I also watch people to see what are you building? Like, what are you building that benefits someone outside of yourself, right? Like, where is it that there's less of you and more of the work? That's the other thing that helps me to kind of make the determination. But I'll tell you, sometimes I'm shocked. Sometimes I meet a person and I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? And the next thing I know, I'm saying, actually, they're right.
So let me ask you this. We've been talking about the administration a lot from a financial standpoint, as far as tariffs and different things of that nature. But I know there's a lot of other stuff that's been going on. I see this Harriet Tubman thing. I'm still not 100% sure what actually happened. Of course, we know about the DEI. Of course, we know about, you know, the murals that's getting taken down across America. Inform us of what's going on as like, what do we need to know that's been happening over the course of the last, you know, couple of months that we may not be fully aware of? And how can we actually just stay in tune with that?
Yeah, I think we have to take it back further than a couple of months, right? Just so that we can watch the trend. And it is why I have been so intentional about talking through what a rollback of diversity, equity, and inclusion really means. Because I know that the conversation has become, oh, this is about white people, white women benefit more than other groups and what have you. And really, the point that we've continuously made is that when they say DEI, while they don't mind hurting their own, they're talking about Black people. And let me give you why. Because DEI is the grandchild of affirmative action. And we know some time ago, they started with affirmative action, wanting to do away with affirmative action, saying that it was unfair, it's racist, it's divisive, so on and so forth. It's to be merit-based. So they started that then. And we know that affirmative action was necessary because if it had not been for something like that, a program or a concept like affirmative action, we would not have been able to gain access to anything. So I think back to Reverend Jesse Jackson and other leaders who fought. And even when you hear some of Dr. King's speeches, not just the I Have a Dream speech, which is what most people know, he was talking about economic advancement, economic equity, right? And so affirmative action is sort of an idea that came out of all of that, that we have to find a way to ensure that Black folks and women and other marginalized groups have a seat at the table, because if not, it would be white men being the leaders of everything, and then they would have their white women being the administrators of their business. So the next thing we know, in the last several years, they started with critical race theory, right? And critical race theory was the first time, and a lot of that came because in Donald Trump's first presidency, and even leading into when the campaign was happening, their own children, the white children were saying, we don't agree with our parents. Then y'all remember when Donald Trump was president, some of the white children, Kellyanne Conway, which was, she was the White House press secretary, her daughter was literally making TikTok videos saying, my mother is being racist. She works for a racist man. These kids turned against their own parents because they were learning about our history. And as Black folks become, you know, more, you're starting to see more professors who are more radical, who are or more acknowledgeable, who are teaching history to college students that the white kids got an opportunity to hear as well. They know that there's something wrong with how our parents and our forefathers are operating in the world and how it is oppressing other people. So now they've come to the DEI fight. What they are basically
what's the critical race theory? What exactly is that?
And by the way, they tried to say that critical race theory was being taught to kids. Remember, they were trying to say that little kids in junior high and elementary school were learning critical race theory, which was not true. Critical race theory is a college concept. So in college, people were learning about racial injustice, racial justice, examining race in all the issues. So in other words, if you want to talk about agriculture, right, they would implement and infuse some conversation about how race impacts even our agriculture, our food, the farmers, the access that some kids get to or certain people get to certain types of fresh fruits and vegetables versus others. So it basically uses the idea that race matters in all areas to teach lessons and to talk about history. So now they're on diversity, equity, and inclusion. So while some of us believe that this is just a new thing that needs to be gutted out because it didn't represent Black folks, it is a continuation instead of them trying to erase our history. So when you talk about the Harriet Tubman piece where they attempted to remove her from the Navy, or the Navy's, I guess they have a national something somewhere, library or something. I don't know. I didn't really do that much research on it. But they wanted to remove that history because they want to whitewash it and not have their own children and communities understand how race and oppression has impacted us as Black people in this nation and why programs like affirmative action and diversity, equity, and inclusion are important in order to ensure that we get our fair and equitable share, which we still aren't. But nonetheless, that is the reason why people fought for those concepts to exist. So, when I think about the importance of this moment, what I see is a nation that is attempting to change history so that we are less aware than we currently are, which so many of our people don't even understand our history in the first place, which is why we have so much killing, Black folks killing one another, the Black beef that we can't get out of that cycle. It is literally because a lot of people do not understand that while we're fighting one another, the entire system is caving down and we're going to be the ones to be impacted the most.
Yeah. For those tonight who are looking for a solution, and despite of all the destruction that's happening with DEI and systemic racism, like in your theory, like what is a solution for us? Is it to leave the country? Is it for us to bond together? Because I know a lot of us want a solution, but I don't think one has been given. In your opinion, what should we do?
Well, you know what? I think it's a mixture of things. I do not think that there's anything wrong with if you have the resources to invest in what I noticed that you all just built some, or you are building in Africa. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I need to figure out how to get to be a part of your project, right? Like, I don't think there's anything
wrong with the location.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong if you have the resources. You should absolutely look at how to set up your life and, of course, to make sure that your children and your family have a place to go. And I think Africa is the best place because we have people there who have open arms. And, you know, they try to teach us that Africans don't like us. They don't want to do business with us. They hate us. And it's a lie. As soon as you put your feet on the soil,
you feel like you're at family reunion.
Exactly. And you're people who say, what is the thing they say to all of us? They say, we've been waiting for you. Welcome home, right? And so I think that, yes. But what we have to also acknowledge is that most of our people will not be able to do that. They either have the resources and don't know, or they don't have the resources and there's nowhere for them to go. So that housing projects in Detroit, the housing projects in the Bronx, the housing projects in St. Louis, that is pretty much, that's it. That's where they are, right? Yeah. Even if they drive in a Benz in that housing project, that's still the, you know, other than them maybe buying a house in the suburbs later on in life, they're not going any further than that. So any farther than that. So now then the question becomes for us as leaders and as people who know better, what do we do to encourage our folks that right where you're sitting without having to move to Africa, without having to do all these things, what do we do right now to stand together? And I personally believe that knowledge is key. Right. It's more than being on Instagram to know what Kanye said and who's sleeping with who and who did this and that and the third. You have to make sure that you're following people like, you know, Until Freedom, my organization, EYL, following different types of people so that you have a deeper understanding of some of what's happening and diverse folks. You've got to go to museums so you can learn history, read books, like get into your education of self so you know who you are. And also the history only repeats itself. So what they are doing in terms of trying to roll back our history in this moment is very similar to them burning down Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's the same exact concept. It's the same concept as burning down Rosewood. Every time they see us gaining traction in terms of our wealth and our education, they begin to do things to roll it back, to stop our growth and really to create division amongst us. So we have to fight against that by pouring in everywhere that they trying to take it out. We got to pour in, make sure we educate our own children, knowing that they don't want you to teach kids in school important lessons or they're banning books. I'm number 5 on the banned book list from the Navy right now. Number 5. Really? So they number 5 on the ban. It came out of the New York Times the other day. So whatever they don't want us to learn, we should go learn it. Just put it that way, simply. The other thing is being in community, right? I personally feel like I'm a stronger leader, not because of what I've done alone, but because what I do in community with others. So the 4 of us at Until Freedom, my son, Linda, Angelo, and myself, we all come from different walks of life. Our attitudes towards things are different. The way we think, the way that we approach everything. And y'all know me and my son, we argue about everything because he sees life from one, you know, not one, but from a perspective that I don't always agree with. That makes me better. So being in community means that I'm able to pick up. I can text with you, Rashad, and be like, well, I don't like so-and-so, or I'll listen to something you say. And I'm like, I don't know if I agree with that. But then again, maybe you're right. So now it's fine tuning my message and helping me get stronger in how I go out and present into the world. That means that self reflection only is not enough. We have to be in community in this moment with other people, join organizations, start book clubs, just be in places and spaces where you become better because of the other individuals you're around. So you would say to me, and I'll be done here, why is that important? Well, because I think that our communities that we build in this moment are going to be important in a few months when some of our people need mutual aid, when some of our kids are in schools that are literally turning their backs on their entire story. I mean, I know that in Florida, they have taken books out of the school that talk about Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman. This is serious stuff, right? So if you're in community, then you can Work on bringing your kids into spaces where you don't need white folks to tell them nothing. You don't need the white school system to tell them anything, because you're having Saturday classes where you're teaching your kids on your own. Certainly, that's how I grew up. And if somebody loses a job in the community, how do we feed one another? How do we make sure that we have the things that we need to be able to survive? That's only going to come by being in community. And the worst thing we do is wait until it's detrimental and then try to go do it at that time. Now is the time to do that. I think that is it must be a big focus for us, is making yourself uncomfortable by being around a diverse group of people and being consistent about it.
Let me ask you this. I want to talk about your book. And I know it's a lot of things that people might not be familiar with as far as your personal life, but talk about the struggles that you faced as an activist, because that's kind of like a preacher. Like I recently learned that there's a high suicide rate amongst preachers, and people might not fully, they probably wouldn't think that, but there's a lot of preachers that go through depression. There's a lot of preachers that, you know, have different things that they're fighting, right? So, okay, you as an activist, a lot of times people think activists is like, you know, you're like the super holy person. You have no problems. You kind of like, you're the guiding light that we're looking to, right? But you are a person just like anybody else is a person, right? Right. So talk about some of the struggles that you face as far as that people that aren't fully locked in, which you might not know, and how you've actually been able to grow from that.
Well, and this is my lovely book right here that was being referenced in this conversation. This right here, the cover really kind of, the cover really kind of describes what you're talking about. The reason why I wrote this book, I Live to Tell the Story, is because I wanted people to know that behind cameras, behind bullhorns, microphones, big crowds, news articles, Instagram, all of that stuff, it's just a human person. I'm just like everybody else, dealing with the same life consequences, circumstances, situations that everyone else is dealing with. So, you know, sometimes I have heartbreak. Relationships don't work. I'm raising a son. Well, now he feels he's fully raised. He's 26 years old. He still needs a little raising. But nonetheless, my son is doing extremely well as a dad and a family man. And I'm very proud of him. But it took a lot of work to get him to that point, right? Because his father has been deceased since my son was 2 years old. So for 24 years, I've been raising him and working with him on my own, except with the assistance of people who voluntarily stepped up to support. And so I know a lot of single mothers out here and single fathers who relate to some of my very real stories in this book about what I've been through. You know, there have been times when I've had money, and there's been times when I have been completely broke. Meanwhile, I look cute because, you know, you keep your clothes in the cleaners and keep them nice and neat. Don't throw them in the washing machine. And that means that later on you can circle back to an outfit and it look like it's brand new, right? So everybody see you out and they like, oh, she fly. No money in the bank. Trying to figure out how I'm gonna pay my car note, how I'm gonna have, you know, groceries. That has happened. And I'm not talking about something that happened to me in 2005. I'm talking about 2019, again, a little bit in 2003, right? I have been through these cycles of one, not having the knowledge that I have now about what to do with money when I do have it. Right. Yeah. And also, and I, you know, I credit you all a lot for helping to make me focus on that. Of course, I have to give also a shout out to my brother, Jay Morrison, who was one to start me to thinking about, like, as an activist, you're not supposed to die broke. That's not like, that doesn't have to be your reality. He was the first person that ever said that to me. And I'm like, oh, you know what? That's true. I can invest. I can buy stocks. I can actually think about something other than trauma every day. These are all things that's in this book. And then, of course, when you talk about the suicide rate, while I never, ever claimed being suicidal, but I will say that at the worst times in my life, and we talked about this the other day, Rashad, you know, when I was labeled anti-Semitic and, you know, everybody that you could think of that I thought would stand with me turned their backs, didn't want to work. Me didn't want to talk to me. You know, it was the worst time of my life, especially knowing that we built the Women's March and it was being torn to pieces over something that was a false accusation. And it was so clear that there were outside interests involved in, again, ruining what we were building. We end up learning this in 2004, maybe the beginning of 2004, late 2003, the New York Times, which, by the way, they published an article from a woman who says that I walked into a meeting and started talking about the that the Jews controlled the slave trade. And she says that I came into a meeting with people and just started talking about this, which was a damn bold-faced lie. But they published an article and allowed her to say all of these things about us. Come years later, here they come back with another article that says, actually, we did some research and the bots started these rumors and people lied on them. And they came back with an expose, yeah, stuff that they helped create and how they were a part of ruining our movement. So anyway, at the end of all of that, dealing with all the stress, everything you could think of, childhood trauma, sexual abuse, all types of things that I've been through. And no, when I was a child, my parents did not, my father, my uncle, nobody sexually assaulted me, but I went through things out in the world, school, and with other young men that I was involved with. All of that stuff has never been addressed because, you know, people tell you don't go to therapy. You crazy if you need medication. Yeah. Crazy if you need to sit on somebody's couch. Something is wrong with you. You weak. And I didn't think that I needed therapy. I didn't even understand that the work that I do every single day, you must be in therapy. You got to be talking to somebody to be getting up every day, going out here, standing up for people, looking at dead bodies, you know, watching videos of people being murdered and then being judged by your own people and calling yourself trying to fight against the oppressor. If you don't get some help with that, you'll be in suicidal even if you claim it. Yeah. And so a big part of this story is that I ended up in 2000 and it was between 2018 is when it started. And I finally got some help in 2019. I started taking Xanax, took 1, 2 pills, 3 pills of Xanax and was like, makes me feel groggy. Let me figure something else out. Next thing you know, I was on Percocets. And then before you know it, it was 20 to 30 pills in a day. That I was taking. And again, I didn't say I was suicidal, but that sounds pretty suicidal to y'all, right?
And that's because of this, the insomnia, right?
I couldn't sleep. Trying to sleep at night is still a challenge for me. But now I have an actual therapist who works with me on what to do. So simple things, because some folks would say, well, you got to do it natural. You know, we don't take medicine because that's another falsehood in our community that you're not supposed to take medicine. Well, I have to do both things. So for me, a natural remedy is that I can't have a Pepsi at night before it's time for me to go to sleep. I can't be eating cookies and cakes and whatnot because that gets me going. So that's a natural piece. But the anxiety that I deal with, that cannot be treated just by me dealing with my diet. That is something that has to be treated by a professional. And I take that seriously now. But at the time, I thought that taking those pills was going to help me numb it. And all it did was create an additional problem.
So you was taking 30 Percocets a day?
Yes, sir. Yes.
That seems like a lot.
Well, let me tell you how it happens. If you take 3 pills 10 times a day, that's not really as many as you think, right? You in the morning and then late morning and then early afternoon and then later in the afternoon and then evening time and then late night. I mean, I'm already up to about 7 times right here, right?
Yeah.
And I said somewhere between 20 and 30. So 20 is a day when I still have to work. So I got to function. And so it's a little less that day. I'm taking them in the morning when I'm waking up, trying to get another nap. If I'm on a flight, popping 3 pills before the flight takes off, resting for that period of time, you know, being whatever, then you get off. Maybe I got to rush to something. But as soon as it's over, I don't want to socialize. I don't want to go to, you know, to whatever everybody else wants to do. And they noticed this about me, but they thought that, and when I say they, I'm talking about Linda, my son, Carmen, all the people who were working around me. They thought I was just miserable from all of what was happening at that time. They had no idea that the reason why I wanted to be in a dark room with the curtains closed was because I was self-medicating. I was actually getting high, which in many ways, taking Percocets at that level is a cousin of heroin. That's what it is. Like, you know, it's a lot of people that would struggle to say that. And I wasn't always comfortable saying it until I went to this psychiatrist one time. I tried to detox on my own without going to rehab, which is where I eventually went. But when I tried to do it on my own at home, I went to this psychiatrist. I looked him up, found him in the yellow pages at the, you know, whatever. I call it the yellow pages. Y'all know what I mean. Yeah. I'm dating myself over here. So anyway, found his number, went to him, and he prescribed something called Suboxone to me.
That's the thing that wean you off of the pills, right?
That's what's supposed to wean you off. But the thing is, when I researched it, I found out that Suboxone has a similar effect to the Percocets, that basically you could get addicted to Suboxone also. So you get off one thing and on to something else. And I didn't want that. So that's why I eventually called the NBA All-Star, Jason Williams. And when I called him and told him, you know, eventually I told him the truth that I needed help, and he put me in a program under an alias. So that's how I went in for a quick download. But the funny thing is that when I went to meet with this psychiatrist, I'm sitting there and I'm doing the Whitney. I don't smoke crack. Like, he's asking me all these different questions. And I'm like, I don't do this and I don't do that. And he laughs and said, you know, it's interesting to me that so many people show up here and believe that because they're doing something that might cost more money or it looks different, that they're somehow different from other addicts. Meanwhile, you're an addict. Like, that's it. You're looking for the same feeling. You just don't want to shoot a needle in your arm, but you're still taking something that has the exact same impact as this other drug that you look down on people for. So it took me some time to be able to accept that that's what it was, but that's what it was. It would knock me out. And what do we know? We know that when people take heroin, they go down for a while, right? And so, yeah, 20 pills on a day when I was busy, 30 pills on a weekend or a day when I had nothing to do. And all I had to do was just sit there and soak in my misery and try to stay sleeping. Because who the hell wants to wake up and your name is in the newspaper with a different story about you being anti-Semitic, about you hating gay people, about the possible misappropriation of funds, Black people saying you think you all that, people telling you you need to denounce a Black leader. Like, who wants to wake up all
constant attack?
It's too much. It's too much.
In those moments, like, did you ever have the thought, because I've had it, like, maybe doing all this work is not worth it? When you did, how did you work your way out of it to stay focused on the goal?
Well, you know, I've been asked this a lot, Ian. I think that having a calling on your life is very different from a passion.
Absolutely.
You have a passion, you can fall out of love with it. You could be like, I ain't doing that shit no more. But when you have a calling, you could be 50 miles away from something and your mind can't get away from it, right? Your intention still somehow leads back to that. And I always liken it to, you know, I've been in relationships where, you know, I wake up in the morning and I'm with the same dude and I'm like, how the hell did I get back here in this with you? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm done, but
I was done. Now, I had a good night. I went to, you know, Rashad's birthday party somewhere.
What a vibe.
one of y'all's things, you know? So I'm cute. I'm up in Brooklyn Chop House. We drinking. And next thing you know, you back, you know? So that's how the movement has been for me. Because in those bad moments, I swear to you, I have been gone. I done found jobs. I have figured out I'm an impeccable event planner. That's what I do, right? I don't know why this thing doesn't want to be right here. That's what I do, right? I do events. I'm very good at it. I'm the type of person when I walk in a room, if the flowers at somebody's party ain't right, I'm over there like, oh my God, please, Lord, let me fix the flowers. I can't, you know, until I can get to straighten one of them out. The whole night, my mind is on that. That's what I do. I have attention to detail. My skills are transferable. So if I, as someone who is an organizer, and this is what I mean, I'm an organizer, I'm a strategist, I can use those skills anywhere. A company that hires me will get a super good employee or leader because I know how to reach the Black community. I understand marketing. I understand, raising the value of a potential customer to bring them into a business, an organization, a concept. Like, I do that work every single day because how else would we be able to create a Breonna Taylor movement from a woman who was shot and killed 2 months before, no one paying her attention at all. And somehow we figure out what to do to bring attention to her situation. Because that's another thing. People seem to think that we show up where the cameras are. There was no cameras in Kentucky. Zero cameras. We bought
cameras. You brought the coverage.
Yep. Exactly. Matter of fact, our cell phones, Instagram was the first thing. That was the first time that she was getting international attention off of our phones. So with that being said, I have thought many times I could take these skills and go work for a bunch of people because before I became controversial, right? Before it became that I was unemployable, I knew everybody. I knew the folks at Moet and Hankin. I knew you name the companies, Pepsi. I had been in their boardrooms. I was there when they started working on, it's funny, when they were putting their DEI programs and strengthening the DEI initiatives within Pepsi, I was there. I was in the room, in the meetings, right? So I could go back to those people and go work for and become a diversity, equity, and inclusion. The chief diversity offices. I could have done all of that before I became too controversial. And there were many times when I thought about it. I had job offers. I had opportunities. I could go work for the government. I was ready. But somehow or another, when Black folk, because that's what always happens, Black people piss me off real good. You know, the judgment, the comments, the
hate.
Why she dressed like that? Why she got a weave on her head? She ain't real. She worked for George Soros, whatever. I get mad and be like, you know what?
I'm done.
I'm out. Yep. Like, I'm out. Gone. Yep. I got it. You can do it better than me. You take it from here.
You do it.
I'm going to go make some money. Okay? Let me go do that. And you know what happens? Just like that man. I wake up the next morning. I'm like, why am I in Tallahassee, Florida, somewhere on the back road doing this? And then I said I wasn't going to do this anymore. But that calling pulls me. Yeah. And I just have to accept. And I finally have accepted. I ain't going nowhere. This is who I am. Yeah. This is what I believe in. This is where I feel that I am most purposeful. And I'm going to continue on this path until the day I die.
Well, thank you for your advocacy, for your transparency. It's important to humanize because it's like, you know, it's ups and downs in life. And
absolutely. I feel
like, you being extremely transparent, especially about the addiction part, because that's something that people struggle with. And a lot of times people struggle with it. I just found out one of my friends was actually addicted to pills. I didn't even notice. But it's like, there's a lot. And what you're saying is something that's familiar with a lot of people. I heard Davey saying something on a show where he was on lean, and he was saying like lean is actually like liquid heroin. And he was like, the same way to laugh at heroin addicts, they start nodding off and dosing. Well, that's who we were. Like I was a heroin addict, right? So it's like, you know, having that courage to just, nobody is above anybody, and everybody is susceptible to the trials and tribulations and temptations and, you know, downfalls. So It's important to tell the whole story. And I feel like that's the sign of true leadership. Some leaders, they just want to just show you the good things, right? But I feel like a true leader can show you the good, the bad, the ugly, and this is who I am, right? I'm not a perfect person, but I am somebody that's focused and dedicated on helping people. And this is the journey. So thank you for that. And
thank you.
The book. Tell them where they can get the book, what to expect in the book again, and all of that.
I am, my book is available anywhere books are sold. So that's first of all, anywhere books are sold, please order it right from your fingertips on your phone. I've been telling a lot of folks to go to Barnes and Nobles versus Amazon for obvious reasons. But if that's where you want to get it from, that's fine as well. But if you have a Black bookstore in your community, support them. Most of them carry my book. And I would appreciate it if folks use this as an opportunity to get to know the Black bookstore in their in their community. So, you know, and I appreciate the support. I want to say that I'm getting ready to leave actually right now to go to another stop. This is my 30th book tour stop since February 6th. From Louisville, Kentucky to you name the city, I don't want to get in trouble, back and forth in New York. Sometimes I'm out in, you know, Norfolk, Virginia and have to rush back to New York because the daytime is Norfolk and the nighttime there's something happening in New York where there's yet another sign-in. I have been blessed beyond measures by people who are showing up by the hundreds to support me across this country. And I'm so, so, so very grateful. I'm not a person who, and not to say that I'll never make the New York Times bestseller list and all of that, but I don't focus as much on that because I know based upon my story and how I am perceived, it's a difficult journey for me, right? So what becomes my New York Times bestseller equivalent is people showing up for me every single day. Mm. That's what fills me and lets me know that I have something, I have a product that folks love and need. And you're right, it's not easy to talk about my addiction. It's probably one of the most difficult things for me to do. But I know that there are people who are addicted to alcohol, people addicted to sex, people addicted to shopping, people addicted to social media, and they all need to hear that there is another side. Like getting help for yourself is not the worst thing in the world. You can actually fight it, make it through it, and become better from the struggle.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
All right. Tamika, Mallory, we thank you for your time.
You're amazing. I appreciate you so much.
Thank y'all so much for having me on. And please send my love to Troy. Tell him, love him much as well.
Man, shout out to Tamika.
For sure. Amazing conversation.
Extremely transparent.
Yeah, I love the vulnerability. Yeah, I found out one of my friends had a pill addiction. It started with Adderall, and then Adderall wasn't hitting the same. And guys, please be careful. And if you need it, go get help. Please go get help.
Like, and a lot of times it happens if you get hurt, you get injured, you get wounded, something happens, you might get shot, you might anything. It's like a lot of these things are pain killers.
Yep.
And that's how Meek Mill said that he got addicted from a tooth. They actually pulled his tooth, a root canal.
Yeah.
And from the root canal, he started taking, I think, Oxycontin, one of these painkillers, and he got addicted. He became addicted to pills. So Nobody thinks that they're going to become a drug addict, you know.
No, nope.
It's one of these things that just kind of happens. But shout out to Tamika. Make sure you get her book. Support her. Important voice in our community. So before we leave, we got to get this turn up happening. Okay, let's get
to this. Do we?
Navarro versus Elon Musk, right?
Musk. Oh,
this is a big deal. Navarro, he's the policy advisor when it comes to economic policy advisor. So Elon Musk, very against tariffs, very much against tariffs, says that it should be zero tariffs with all of the white countries, U.S.
European nations.
U.S. and Europe should have zero tariffs.
That's the Cliff Notes version. No taxes on the white countries. Got you.
Yeah, no tax on the white countries. Please, let's have some decor here. And I just found out Peter Navarro actually wanted to go further. Like the tax, the tariff plan that Trump put out, Navarro wanted to go further than that. He's like the Wall Street's losing a lot of money right now.
For sure.
Elon Musk is hurting. Tariffs has hurt his companies. So now he's calling him an idiot. Navarro said that Elon just is a car maker, like stay in your lane type thing. We knew that
that's this the white version of shut up and dribble.
Basically, we knew that this day was gonna come. Yep. How bad is it inside that ecosystem?
It's a toxic suit, man. When the political fights start to look like rat beefs, it is not good. And we got to talk about it. Did he make up a fictional character to cite the source for the tariff rollout that we have now? Have to be fair.
Whoa. What do you mean? Explain that.
Okay, well, Navarro quotes.
Tell the story. People might not know that.
So everyone's like, okay, he's citing a guy, Vara, economic policymaker or analyst, as the reason for why these tariffs should work. And then conservatives and liberals like start doing a little Google ChatGPT and come to find out no one can find this economic wizard who came up with this tariff plan that he's citing as his reason for why we should do tariffs. Go ahead.
That's the craziest thing. I don't want to leave this point. He made up.
Fake news.
He made up a pseudonym name for himself. So it's like, okay, my name is Rashad Bilal, right? So I'm going to remix this name and say Shamara blank is a international economic from India. It sounds like an Indian name, right? Shamara or something. Yeah. It's a remix of my name.
Yeah.
And Shamara has put a detailed report out saying why this is beneficial. It's a fake person. I wrote it, remixed it, and sold the shit to Donald Trump and to the American public. Like, do you not think you're gonna get caught? You can just Google and see if this person
Google and ChatGPT, he's not living anywhere. What? And it's causing a global precession. Because we can't use the R word yet. Is that an act of economic terrorism?
Man, these people get away with so much stuff, bro. Like, even during the Bush administration, when they, you know, just how they wanted to go about the war in Iraq and how they made up that whole thing. And I watched a documentary about that. Rumsfeld and all the Cheney and all these guys and how they made up a story. They made up a story about Saddam's name having weapons of mass destruction. They made up a whole thing and they pitched it to George Bush and Camp David and said, look, we can sell this to the American people and American people will get behind it. And now thousands of war. And it's like the effects of hundreds of thousands of people end up dying. The longest wars in American history, billions, trillions of dollars. Just because somebody just had an idea and they wanted to just have a fantasy thing that they made up in their head. And this is the same thing, just on a different level. Like, you making up something in your brain, putting out a fake name, selling it to somebody who's obviously not even intelligent enough to even fact check what you're telling them. And then you're selling this, you're trying to sell this to the world, and $20 trillion going in the stock market for 3 days for no reason.
Yeah. Speaking of the market, I don't know if Putin called or Xi Jinping, but Trump said he's going to put together a 90-day pause on tariffs. NASDAQ is up.
Yeah, it had to happen. It had to happen because it's like we knew that this was going to happen.
When they call from China, a big dog. I hear you, but
we knew that this was going to happen.
For sure.
Right? We just didn't know when. But it's like, what the hell? What kind of game are you playing? Yo, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna hold off. That's abuse almost. That's like being in a relationship. I'm kicking, pack your bags. I'm kicking you out. You got till June 1st. Get your shit out of here. And now you're rushing, you're making phone calls. And then on May 25th, it's like, all right, I'm gonna give you
one second thought. Yeah. You know, well, let's figure a way to work it out. For all of you insider traders, give it to September. They're going to find out that you had puts and call options and buying credit default swaps. You may want to clean up the financial collusion you've been doing. in this as well, allegedly.
Legendary,
so,
bro.
This
stop and go.
But Nagoro, you need to take somebody's AI likeness, build them a social media profile first, fake a YouTube speech from 1987 and put that up. Go, what was they doing in 2021? They was buying the views for the podcast. Go do that and at least make the character look believable before Trump and because Elon, regardless of what you want to say. If I paid for you to be in here, I want to get a return on my investment. I don't want to see my wealth go down and my companies fall apart because you made up a tariff plan off a fictional character.
So who made them put the 90-day pause into effect? Was it Elon Musk? Was it the Wall Street Consortium? Was it the GOP? Was it Hefe in Russia? Was it
combination? Listen.
Who put the call in and said, you're going too far? You're going Big too G. far.
Big G and Big P call. You want to go this way? Hey, when Big Putin call? Hey, you seen what he did with Prigozhin? He shot that shit out the air. And 4K.
You're going too far. You're going too far, Biggs.
You're going to, listen, if you mess up, like fellas, you ever messed up a bag and then you got to go home and tell your girl or your wife, imagine the entire world leadership is calling you like, I don't know what you're doing, but this is not going to end well. Mm-mm. You can't mess up you can't drop the Japanese stock market, the Chinese stock market, India and ours in 1 week. You should have said Harry Potter said this is a good idea.
That's what I'm saying. Like at some point in time, people are going to have to really face some real issues. You caused all of this shit for no reason.
For no reason. For ego.
You caused this, reversed it off of a fictional Disney character that you just made up in your head.
And then China tears up from 104, which is crazy, to 125%, which will make them go to every other country and say, I need this from you. This to replace our relationship with America, this is only going to empower BRICS. Where are all of you dumbasses who were saying BRICS is not real, it's never going to happen? We're seeing it play out in real time.
What do you think, oh, man, this China thing, how bad can this get from tariff? 104%, 125%, they're just throwing numbers out there at this point. The collateral damage has yet, you know, I'm buying a door. I bought a door from China and my contractor told me like, it's going to be like $7,000. And I'm like, is tariffs included? He's like, yeah, it'd be $700 more because of tariffs. He's like, so I'm already getting affected by this. China, man.
I don't know GG, but if I get on Signal or something, I said,
how far? Because they're gonna have to resolve this too. Just like he had to reverse course and say 90 days, he's gonna have to resolve. How long does this China game of chicken play?
I hope it doesn't last 90 days, but the difference is we have to resolve the issue because we're not the one with the gun. They got us. They caught us, they got the low. Hey, China's acting like a YN. Yes, we have to say sorry. They don't have to. We built up India's middle class. We built up China, shipped all the jobs away, all the manufacturing. Like you said, if we even wanted to bring the manufacturing back, it's going to take 20 years to build enough plants to get that going. iPhones would be $7,000 a piece.
At least.
Apple dropped 20%. Like a beacon of safety dropped 20% off of fake news. I don't know any DEI hire who would have did this shit. Not one. Tim Scott. What's up,
you boy,
Byron? Where are y'all at? One of y'all called him daddy on Fox.
That was Byron McDonald. You wild for that. You wild.
Calling the white man daddy is crazy, unless it's your kink. That's crazy. What the fuck? Baron don't call him daddy in public like that. What? Yo,
this is the biggest game of shit. I made a mistake in world history. Like you play this shit so bad, and every MAGA I know, you're gonna be like, that's the game of chess. This I knew he was playing chess all along. He wanted to give you an opportunity to buy the dip. Now he fucked up. and he realized he fucked up. And he got calls from the money because a few hours ago they were saying that it's Main Street's time to shine and it's not about Wall Street until Wall Street's like, okay, now you're going too far, man. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna mess up the money. That's what you're not going to do.
4,900 to 5,300 in less than an hour on ES is insane. Yeah, but this is the other dangerous part. Anything that moves up too quickly to the upside is bound to crash again.
That's a fact.
So what if China says, fuck it, 400, go YG, 400. We're going to put 400% tariffs on you or 200%. What are we going to do?
And that's the main component. China is that's the main event.
Like, hey, Trump bring up a great point. He put, this is a great time to buy earlier today and then push the market up.
Trump?
Yeah. Is that the biggest case of public insider trading, allegedly, that we've seen?
Allegedly. He said this is a great time.
That's insane. For those of you who don't know, whatever information that you have to disclose it to the proper channels. Like, I've never seen leadership do anything like this ever. In any company or any country, let alone.
Can't make this shit up. A lot of short sellers got squeezed.
Oh, that's over with. Once again, the market is permanently rigged to stay up because if the market stays down for two consecutive quarters, it causes a recession, and then they're going to have to liquidate positions, and it's going to cause a lot of bubbles to pop. Credit default swap trading got back to the high of 2008 because of tariffs. And if I'm China, and I'm looking and saying, this little tariff threw y'all market off? Oh, let me drop Bovid 22.
And the crazy thing is, we literally said on Monday, if he announces a 90-day pause, then the stock market's going to go up.
For sure, it'll go up. Yep.
But this might be a temporary bump if they don't get a solution with China. The China thing is still something that they got to figure out. That's important.
And leadership. And we talked about this. I remember in London, you're like, discourse, kind leadership sometimes is the way to go. I'm like, no, I want to know. He like, look, I know, but look for the blowback. I remember other time, talking, hey, don't even say nothing back to this person because he going to go on longer. You have way less to lose. Diplomacy often gives you a multiple that war will not. It's okay. He should call Xi Jinping and say, hey, I went about this the wrong way. Let's have a good relationship. Because clearly, if Xi Jinping sat down Jack Ma and throttled Tencent to show, no, we're going to act as one united front. That's the real nobody bigger than the program. Jack Ma was about to overtake Amazon, and they sat his ass down for two comments. And if he's willing to destroy the real estate market over there in order for the country to beat us, and I hate to say it, and Ish asked me today, he like, yo, do we think it's over for America? Once China gets this lead, we're never going to be number one again. No, same with Apple. You better fix that Apple intelligence shit pronto. Because if Microsoft keeps this lead for a 3 or 4 month period, you'll never be number one again. You'll never see top of that Billboard chart ranking. Got to be careful. Biggest threat we've ever seen. This is like a financial and biological Pearl Harbor that we can't fix, even though that was a false flag, allegedly.
Allegedly.
So,
never a dull moment. Never a dull moment, man.
Then it got so bad that poor Adam 22 lost his business. Damn. How you MAGA and then lose your business on top of it? What?
I'm really interested to know what was the deciding factor, though. I think that it might have been Larry Frank.
You start to get some pressure.
When you got people like that to be like, you know, no, it's not going to happen, bro.
I know we skimmed over it on Monday when the founder of the World Economic Forum steps down. That's not a position you just give up. That was telling. Warren Buffett been quiet as hell. Ray Dalio making more podcast appearances. When you see super rich white men belaboring the point of the country falling apart, that's how you know it's really messed up. When in history of America have rich white men come to the public and say, oh, disaster's coming? Bill Ackman, we are going to have a conversation one day about how you, what's the term here? The grandmas may be watching. Ill repute, my boy. Ill repute. One day we're going to have a conversation. Baby Buffett, never. Never. Insane.
You could never.
No, never. Charlie either. Charlie got you wiped down. What?
So this is Trump's official response to this whole China thing. Based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world's market, I am hereby raising the tariffs charged to China by the U.S. to 125% effective immediately. At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize that the days of ripping the USA and other countries is no longer sustainable and acceptable. Conversely, and based on the fact that more than 75 countries have called representatives of the United States, including Department of Commerce, Treasury, USTR, to negotiate a solution, subjects to discuss relative to trade, tariffs, currency manipulation, and monetary, I have authorized a 90-day pause. Allegedly, these 75 countries. We never really got a list of who these 75 countries are. Allegedly. So, okay.
Yeah.
90-day pause on the tariff. So, China is still up for China. Every other country got 90 days.
Yeah, because in 90 days, it's going to throw your ass out of office like Uncle Phil used to Jazzy Jeff out of Fresh Prince.
We never really got full a list of these 75 countries.
We can make them up like Vara did. Some countries that don't even exist. Atlantis. 300% tariff on all water imports. Okay, my boy. Sorry. I've never seen more Republicans in Texas. I'm on a plane. They going off on Trump. I'm like, that's a Democratic convention? He's running our country into the fucking ground. I'm like, damn, okay. It's terrible. Right idea. 80 years to, and in lieu of tariffs, how about you not ship all of the steel jobs over to India and China and all manufacturing? Even Chappelle made the joke, like, yo, I want to wear Nikes. I don't want to make them. The jobs you're talking about bringing back, no one wants.
Fact.
And you can't build up. I'm not like a global economist, right? I just play one on YouTube. But you cannot build up an enemy's capital and the classism. Like, you have 22-year-old women in India who are now leaving their homes to live in downtown environments that look like LA in the 1980s. When historically that didn't happen. As a person who been to Bangladesh before and been to India before, we put so much money into India, we changed our cultural norms. But then you want to tell black people, ain't no jobs for y'all, the black jobs. You shipped all the black jobs over to fucking India and China. And now they're coming back with the big Draco 90 clip, 90-day tariff. You better call and say sorry. Because Elon, he'll take his little South African ass right over to China with Xi Jinping and be best friends. He go get that little North Korean haircut. That's just in North Korea. We have to be very careful. And once again, if tariffs did this, if they unleash another bioweapon, or because they own majority of our bonds, what if Xi Jinping collapsed the Chinese real estate market to cause a global rout to affect our real estate market, what happened?
We're screwed.
This shit is crazy. I've never seen. Is Trump the worst leader we've seen ever? I'm thinking of all the Republicans. Ross Perot wouldn't have did this. Mitt Romney would have did this. George Bush, Colin Powell, Candace Owens wouldn't have did this.
George Bush, legendary though. George Bush is probably the worst. He's probably the worst. But yeah, Trump is running neck and neck with George. He's running neck and neck with him.
Yeah.
He's running neck and neck.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay, before we leave, direwolves. The direwolf clones are being brought back. They said the last time direwolves existed was 11,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. They got popularized by Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a company that specializes in the de-extinction of animals, bringing animals that were extinct.
Oh, that's the word of the day, de-extinction.
And the direwolf. So apparently what they've taken a wolf and they remixed this DNA 20 times. Come up with, but they said they have three direwolves. Not really, I guess, a pure direwolf.
It's not a pure blood,
not a pure blood direwolf, but they changed the DNA 20 times to get it, I guess, similar to what a direwolf would have been 11,000 years ago. My mm-hmm. thing is why?
The real reason, you want to be honest? It's a lot of tech bros who were not able to get funding. In most spaces, because they were crowded, and if they found a way to pull this off, the funding is flooding. Remember what I told y'all 3 years ago? Woolly mammoths and pterodactyls were going to come back. The only area of available, if you are in tech, because you're not competing against NVIDIA, Meta's wiping everything social down. Like, those gates are closed. Bioengineering is the only capital that is available that most VCs and angels will put money into. They didn't even have a geneticist on staff when they made the announcement to do this 4 years ago. Like, they got the funding and then found a geneticist to make it happen. So it is interesting, to say the least. For those who have seen Jurassic Park, we get funding at scale, this will not end well. So, but if you got a one that's like 8 months old, send it to me so I can bring it on stage at InvestFest.
And y'all, who gave you the rights to start fucking with animals' DNAs? Like, that's some level of animal cruelty. Like, imagine if a human, if somebody just wanted to just make a human with three arms, right? So they just start fucking with DNAs, and then before you know, you have a human that has three arms. Like, that's the level of fucked up type of shit that you're doing to these animals. Like, you're literally changing the DNA of animals, and with no regard to the actual species that you're actually changing and morphing into a character off of X-Men. Like, you're turning, and then we don't know what's, like, AI. You're creating things that you don't even know what the potential could be.
Very short-sighted. And the diseases that could come from it. Not maybe with the direwolf, but down the line, I'm worried about if they create, like, my concern is the pterodactyl and bird species. Because the avian flu and the avian sicknesses that come into humans, they have caused triage in our body. So that's what I'm worried about. But remember when they had that bat soup, get a pterodactyl soup going on? Perfect thing to send over to the United States in real time to fuck up our economy.
They're gonna have dragons. So why not? If you could make a person up to crash the economy, and you could bring back a species that was around 11,000 years ago, why not just make a species that never really existed, but just a fictional character, and just have fire-breathing dragons? It's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, well, now you really go on Game of Thrones.
If they make a fire-breathing dragon, I'm selling every asset I own to get one. And if you are not my friend, it is up. Melt you to smithereens, my boy. I had no control over it. Sorry.
Three dragons.
Crazy. But yeah, Willie Mammoth, I think, will be that.
Whatever happened to her?
Who?
Game of Thrones, the Dragon Queen.
I don't know. She may be in Mykonos. I don't know.
That cast of characters, it hasn't really worked out for them. Like, Jaime Lannister, I saw him at the Clippers game, but what has he done? My guy, the short guy.
Short guy, yeah.
Tyron Lannister. Where's he been?
He's talented.
The Dragon Queen, where has she been? Like, Game of Thrones is the biggest show ever on television, right? You would think that would be a springboard for these people's careers. It hasn't really worked out in that fashion.
I hope the royalty receivables are going well for them. Because I know what they need to call Endeavor and or UTA and figure out what to do. Call UTA. Let's get it figured out ASAP.
That's a fact.
If I was the number one show of all time, boy, I want 20. I'm gonna be Shaq. Give me 20 commercials, 5 new TV shows, call it a day.
At least.
But it's a great lesson in succession planning. While you're hot, you need to plan for the next 10, 15 years what you're going to do. You can't wait, because once you cold, like the retired athletes, it's tough. It's tough.
That's so bad. Yeah. Okay. I think we touched about a lot.
Yeah.
Trump, you never know. You never know.
Anthony Edwards, go ahead and...
Is that real, though? I think the Anthony Edwards thing has not been confirmed.
They said it was fake news, that he wasn't able to pay it off in one time. But if so, you better... The market's up. You call. See if you can get it done.
Invest in that market.
Instant wire. So, fellas, got to be careful, y'all.
About that, they said it's a rumor, but it's still a good conversation piece. They're saying that Anthony Edwards was paid his child support for 18 years up front. Like I said, I don't think that actually happened. But let's just say hypothetically. Let's just say hypothetically. I think 50 Cent might have done this too, though. But let's say hypothetically that this happened, right? Is that beneficial or non-beneficial? I look at it two ways. I look at it as it's beneficial from the standpoint of we've locked in terms, right? You can't increase it over the next year, 5 years. You can't come back. Like, we've locked in terms for a pretty reasonable amount. And at one time, I can get the payment out to you. So that's helpful to me. It's harmful to me because there's he's $100 million, so it doesn't matter. But it's an opportunity cost for that $1 million. So it's better for me to pay you $5,000. Because now, if I invested said money, right, I can actually pay you the $5,000 off of the interest on the investment while still having the investment growing. So I'm able to make more money with my capital as opposed to giving you a lump sum of money, right?
Yep.
It's like buying a home. Like, if I have $2 million to buy a home in cash, or if I can get a mortgage, right? Well, as long as I can earn more in investing than the interest on that mortgage, then theoretically it would be better for me to take that mortgage and use that $1.7 million to invest, because that'll grow. But from her standpoint, it's beneficial because you get a lump sum of money up front.
A lump sum, but the detrimental side,
if you blow it,
baby girl, it's over.
Baby girl. So what do you think? Like, is that something that if you had to give somebody advice, is that advisable or is that not advisable?
If I was advising him, it is advisable. Now, we can have a conversation about if it's right because he's washing his hands of the kid. But I don't know when he's renewing for the Supermax. But a lot of times, you know, if you're going back year four, you can go renegotiate. Cost of living is going to get higher. So to knock it out in one lump sum, if you have the time to pay it, like, even for me, I pay my 2-3 years in advance. So when I saw this, I was like, man, that's a super chess move. But
you say you paid your child support 3 years in advance?
2 or 3 years in advance, yeah.
That's not through the court system, though. That's through just worked out.
Like, it's not stated that I have to do that, but it makes it a lot easier. And I'm like, you got to bust a move. You get there for me, you know what I mean? So to provide peace and serenity. Fellas, it's a big lesson. You got to be able to have peace and things structured in a certain way for you to be able to live your best life. But I think for Anthony, if he can't get it done, if he doesn't want any involvement with the child, that's heartbreaking because that's going to cause a lot of issues down for the child. But that $1 million or whatever won't affect him, because of course in 3 or 4 years, that $5,000 a month for sure will probably go up to 15 or 16,000. So
So when you pay in advance, you should put, you should, it's like a discounted rate though, right?
For sure.
Discounted.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. If you can get the discounted rate, because both parties win. One party gets a lump sum of money. The other party gets to save money over the course of time because it's a discounted rate than what they would have paid on a month.
And it also goes to a good lesson of the cost of lack of sexual discipline too. You can't be knocking down everything. That shit has a cost, my boy. Especially if you live.
That's the real tariff. That's the real tariff.
Boy, tell me about it. What? That's the other big P tax. What? Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful, my boy. My grandmother used to say, weigh up all the costs before you do anything.
Well, that's going to be another thing, too. People talk about the immigration thing and they cutting back on Venezuela and Colombia. What is the tariffs going to be on that, right? All you passport bros and all that. Like, what's the tariff on the import and the export play? Like, what's the tariff on that?
Y'all done raised the price 20%. Up and y'all going there and get robbed. What?
At least
20%. Okay, it's a bunch of y'all who got robbed of your Balenciaga while you over there. Be careful, my Rolex. All right.
We'll be trapped.
All right. Going to Sosua and all that. Yeah, y'all.
Domestic. We're going to have to rely on the domestic product more.
For sure.
No more outsourcing.
For sure.
No more outsourcing.
Oh, my God.
Make America great again.
Yeah.
Okay.
What you think of Passport Bros?
Passport Bros, it's kind of wild if you think about it. Like, to take a trip, to take a sex tourism, that's pretty sleazy. It's pretty sleazy.
For sure.
That's pretty for sleazy, sure. In my opinion, crime. Right? Yep. It's pretty sleazy way to go about it.
Like, you can't get nobody in the States. It's a bunch of cities.
Yeah. If you got work overseas, that's different. But if you're going to pay, a prostitute, if you're traveling over 5 hours to pay money to a prostitute, you gotta reevaluate your life.
And a lot of y'all be going over there and get rejected, not getting who you want to.
And got a night.
I went over there to go 5 hours.
Coming back, fucking gotta get insulin. Shots.
Look, that's another thing. Them HIV and AIDS, right? Some of y'all, boy, come with some life-altering viruses fucking being nasty down there.
Another fire-breathing dragon. Talk about that, man. Like, yo, y'all got to chill, man. Y'all going over there paying tariffs, getting robbed.
Come back with zombie virus.
Catching all kinds of fucking undetectable viruses.
Yeah.
The chicks is sniffing Tootsie.
Like crazy.
Drinking unregulated alcohol. You got to be careful, man. Be careful.
For real. Yep, that's not the play. Hey.
It's not that serious. You're like, the amount of money that you're going to spend to go to Venezuela, like, you could have just...
get a four.
Yo, it's not that serious, bro. Could have been manufactured in America. You could have actually manufactured that in America. It might have been cheaper, but think about the plane ticket, the hotel, the anxiety that you have to live with. It's not worth it. Don't do it. This passport broke thing, you've gone too far. You've gone too far.
Mm-hmm. That's the other forex y'all be trying to trade. Walking up and down the strip 12 a.m. at night. All right. Y'all got 8 girls with me. You're going to get robbed 8 times.
The medical bill never really covered that. That's the other part of it. That's the part it's a lot that goes into this thing. You want to make your TikTok videos of like 1 a.m. in Medellin. This is why we're never coming back to America.
You're going to be in the hospital 8:30. Stab wounds and super gonorrhea. All right, my boy. I am good. And they be taking y'all, even like you like walk to a little strip in Mexico, want a massage that? No. They take you into a building with no windows. Hefe come here. Oh, what's this? A surprise. You going to Manzanillo, motherfucker. They're going to take you and them Subarus, ship you right to Ghana, and not where Rashad and Troy be. Global trade. Now you a sex slave. What you going? All right. Nah, nope.
Be careful.
You gotta be careful, yo. It's always the underworld, and like, okay, so during the day, Playa look beautiful, right? You walk at night, I'm like, don't none of these buildings have no windows in them. Nope. Right up Fifth Avenue. I'm good. Cool. Go to the crib. I am straight. Oh my God.
Okay.
Your family don't got a particular set of skills to get you away from Sinaloa. It's over with. That's sorry.
They're going
to
leave you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Another glorious blackout
in the Bronx.
Don't forget tomorrow, 6 o'clock, Pinky Cole, earn your leisure. Tap in, get your tickets to InvestFest.
Yes.
Red and Rebellion, eninvest.com. If you want the best prices to know when to actually buy stocks,
hey,
prices, and much more. Okay.
Senior Trump is crazy, yo.
Not Trump, wow. He's wild. Wild boy, man.
S&P up 400 points. Boy, Melania must say she was going to leave.
Baby girl.
Real. Oh, God.
Yes, sir. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been real. Love.
Peace.